out your giant foam fingers, dig out the clappers, get your favourite Reading shirt, because we are on the road to Wembley. Maybe, possibly, you know, just that whole matter of a two-legged semi-final to get through first. But it's playoff time for Reading. Those things that always provide us such happy endings. We've made it. That 1-0 win over Wigan guarantees our place in the top six. And we are here to celebrate here on the Tile SM podcast, episode 128. You know, we'll get the celebrations out of the way nice and early because, you know, playoffs, all that jazz. Anyway, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilesden.com. Thank you very much, as always, for hitting that download button and listening to the show. Before I introduce my two co-hosts this week, I've got to very quickly thank everyone who has joined into the Patreon campaign, which is our crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/thetilesden. As I've said on many a show, consider it our electronic tip jar. Same way you would give a waitress or a waiter or a bartender a tip for good service. If you like what we do, you want to see us do more of this, and, you know, we're helping you get through your commute or your day, why not go to patreon.com and give whatever you can? It all very much helps. Anyway, with that shilling out of the way, I'll introduce my two co-hosts. First of all, a familiar voice, Mr. Mark Mayo. Mark, hello.
I'm not too bad, thank you. Bit disappointed by the fact that in the playoffs, we're not allowed to have like a tin foil trophy in the same way that you would for the FA Cup.
Oh, I think.
With, like, you know, you've got the foam fingers and everything's all there, a bit of jester's hat maybe and some face paint, but not the tinfoil trophy.
No.
One thing we're missing, isn't
it? You do get a trophy for winning the playoffs, but I can't remember what it looks like.
It's not quite iconic, is it?
It's a bit like, I think it's a bit like the LDV Vans trophy.
Yeah, it's like a football at the top or some arrangement they've got. It might be new this year.
I saw completely divergent about this. I saw that the second place teams, like, I think Bolton got a trophy for finishing second in League One.
They've had that for a few years, I think, because they had the shield, I think, when Sheffield United was second to us in 2006. They got a shield, and that was the first year they did it.
Bizarre.
Potentially.
Well, it's only taken us 2 minutes to get this podcast off to a complete tangent before I've even introduced our second co-host, which is the lovely Miss Becca Ellen. Becca, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
You usually record in much more luxurious circumstances with us. You've been in the hotel room when we did our impromptu Steve Clark has been sacked. No, he hasn't. Podcast, and then our 100th episode at the Mad Stad. So I'm sorry you're the glamorous studio that is, Mark. I shouldn't pull back the curtain too much.
Well decorated.
Absolutely. Well, Becca, thank you very much for joining the show. How has your week been?
Very good. Very. Just had 2 weeks off work and gone back, and it's all lovely.
Absolutely. Reading in the playoffs, heading for Wembley, as we say. You know, we won't think about the semi-final. That's just a formality. Of course we're going to get there and then win. That always happens to Reading, and we'll tell you how we got there. That's coming up in the recap.
View from the Tilehurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
So the tension was kind of ramped up a little bit for this game, guys. We knew that we needed just 1 point to make the playoffs. But within, say, 15, 20 minutes on Saturday, it all seemed to be going well. We were 1-0 up. Leeds were getting absolutely hammered by Norwich. And it all felt like a little bit of an anti-climax by the end, Mark.
Yeah, well, we got six minutes in was when Kermigan scored.
Yeah.
And I think Reading teams of old would have made that a 4-0, 5-0 win. We'd have had a nice little second half rally, certainly a few goals at the end. But this team doesn't really do that. It's not scored four all season. It's only scored three in a 3-0 win once, had a three-goal advantage then. But it's not the type of team that really kicks on and keeps scoring goals for the hell of it. And once it's got the goal that it needs to win the game, and Wigan, not too threatening, but I'd say a little bit threatening, it was pretty comfortable, and then it just kind of sat out the rest of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, Wigan came into the game knowing they needed to win to have any hope of staying up. They were reliant on results elsewhere, which, as it turned out, didn't go their way. So even if they'd beaten us 10-0, it wouldn't have made a difference. But Becca, what did you make of the atmosphere on Saturday? Because this is one of the biggest games of the season. I think it's a very rare occasion we've opened up the South Stand for home fans. I missed a Newcastle game. Do we open that up for that one?
Full of Newcastle fans.
That's full of Newcastle. So this is the first time this season now we've had home fans in the South Stand.
Yeah.
What did you make of the atmosphere? Because it seemed just that it didn't quite seem party time just yet.
I think obviously when Kermigan scored, that was quite exciting, and then I think obviously Sean McDonald got injured quite early on in the first half. I think maybe that kind of flattened it a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think the first half kind of seemed the same after that, and then second half it just wasn't that kind of exciting football that we used to see. And it was, I wouldn't say Wigan had more of it of the possession, but I'd say maybe they came out a bit more with a bit more fight, and then maybe that just kind of killed the game off as well.
Yeah, well, they came, as I said, they came into this game with absolutely nothing to lose, and they did have that purpose. You mentioned the Sean McDonald injury. Absolutely horrible scenes, and you have to fear for the poor guy. A broken leg, picked up in a tackle with George Evans that saw the Reading midfielder yellow carded. Now, I've seen the incident again. I think I've shared it with the two of you, so we've had the chance to see it all again. What did you make of this tackle? Was this a reckless tackle from George Evans, or was this just one of those tackles where, unfortunately, it's just an unfortunate thing that happened?
I think if you look at it in another way, in the sense that if you'd have watched that tackle and George Evans would have come out with the same injury, if it had been the other way around, but the same set of events, it's kind of believable that McDonald's tackle would have caused Evans's injury, in a sense. So I think they've both gone in hard. It's unfortunate, and looking back on it with the hindsight of a leg break always makes things look worse. So I think a yellow card, it's not an outrage that he's been yellow card. It's not a heinous challenge sort of thing. It's just an unfortunate one.
What do you make of it, Becca?
Yeah, I agree. I think we all kind of know that George Evans isn't that kind of player. He's not malicious. I think it's just one of those things that does unfortunately happen. I think when you see those tackles in other games, like, there have been red cards regardless of whether there's been any intent there. So I think he was quite lucky not to have been sent off.
Yeah, it was one of those things where you could very easily see a red card coming out. I think a yellow, in hindsight, I suppose that's fair. I mean, the best way to judge it, I guess, is the reaction of McDonald himself. And he has been an absolutely classy guy for someone that's been through such agony. I mean, it's been a long time, thankfully, since we've seen a player carted straight off from the Medeski to a hospital. 10-minute delay in this game. So he went through a lot, oxygen on the pitch, all of that. And ever since, he's been on social media. He's thanked the Reading medical staff. He's thanked the people at the hospital. And he said, you know, don't worry about it to George Evans. He's not holding him responsible. He's passed on well wishes. He's even said to Reading, go on and get promoted, which shows, again, what a fantastic lad he is. And we wish him nothing but a speedy recovery. I'm sure that goes for all of us here and everyone, all Reading fans everywhere. But it wasn't just Wigan, unfortunately, picking up injuries. Reading got a significant one as well. Fortunately, nowhere near as severe long term. But in the short term, this could be quite as disruptive, Mark. Gareth McCleary limped off just before the break. He'd been struggling in the build-up to this game with a groin problem. Looks like that's flared up again. He's now a doubt for the playoffs. How big a blow is this?
It's a big blow, not only because his absence on the pitch is bad, but also Gareth McCleary doesn't play well when he's got little knocks, and he has to be completely fresh. He has to be on form. We saw that through the whole of last season, and I think it's probably the season before when he's coming back from his back injury. When he's not 100% fit, he doesn't quite have that momentum in his game. So even if he does play off the back of this, I would worry that he wouldn't be playing particularly well.
Becca, he's sort of fallen away a little bit in terms of form in this second half of the season. If you look in the first half, he was amongst our top goal scorers. We'll come on to this. He was very much in contention for player of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
But not even making the top three when the results were announced on Saturday. And just generally, as I said, going a bit off the boil. But do you think that is almost a good thing for Reading because they've learned how to play without McCleary, or is this still a big blow going forward?
I think it's a bit of both. I think, obviously, McCleary was key at the start of the season, or certainly through the first half of the season. I think Yapstam came out and said after the game in his post-match interview that McCleary has been struggling for weeks. Like, he's not been doing all the training sessions. He's been on painkillers. And it gets to a point where you have to know kind of when to stop. And in that same sense, we like you said, we still managed to grind out results without him. We still got players there that can still do damage, and yeah, I think you can see both sides of that there.
Do you risk him if he is, say, is McCleary a player that has to be 100% fit, or can you gamble with him at say 75-50% and see what you get?
I think I agree with Mark in that you can see on the pitch when he's not fully fit. As soon as Yapstam's come out and said, he's not fit, he's been on painkillers, he's done this, and it does relate. You can see that on the pitch. You can see that, and you can almost see in his body language that he's frustrated that he can't give 100%. So I'm not sure that I would risk him unless he was totally there.
We did see the good side of him though in the time he was on the pitch. He put in that lovely ball for Kermigan. I was fortunate enough to be in the hospitality lounge for this one as our end of season treat for myself and Wim Senior. It was a very belated Father's Day
present. That's where the Patreon money goes, lads.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a much belated Father's Day present. As I said, that was bad for me. I'm a bad son. But anyway, we were in there and they bring in the sponsor's man of the match, and happened to be Kermigan on Saturday. And he was saying he was joking with McCleary earlier in the week about the quality of crosses and stuff that he was getting. So he says it was nice to get one from him. And a 17th goal of the season now for Kermigan. I did an article earlier in the week that you can go read on thetarlesden.com looking at where he ranks, and already he's sort of in that top, I think he's seventh now for most goals in a championship season. Just how good has this season been for Kermigan?
I mean, it's better than probably anyone imagined, because we looked at him as being a 10 goal, playing every now and then, kind of striker off the bench, having, what other options did we have at the start of the season? We were quite thin, weren't we, really? Having Mendes, maybe he was going to play a part. And maybe Raquel's would lead the line. We always were looking for a new striker. Dom Samuel as well was one to look at. But I don't think 17 goals, many people predicted that. Certainly not as the role that he has within the team as well. He's certainly integral to the way that we play, because no one else does the job that he does in the squad.
Becca, is this might sound like a strange question, but has this felt like a 17-goal season? Because you look at the tally, usually when a player scores 20 goals in a season, you go, oh, he's been scoring every week, you know, you just expect it. But at least personally for me, Kermigan's kind of snuck up with this 17-goal tally. Has it felt like a prolific campaign?
I think I agree with you. And I think when we did the 100th podcast in September, I think I mentioned then that he adds so much more to the team than just the goals. I think I was speaking to my mum. We went to the Forest game last week, and I think when someone said, "Oh, he scored his 16th goal," I was like, "Oh, okay." I never quite realised that. And then, yeah, I think it has just creeped up. But like, he's been so good for us this season. Everywhere, I think.
You only need to look at the only people above him in terms of more goals in a second tier season are Trevor Morley, who bagged more than 20 in a very mediocre 96-97 season. But he was a fantastic player. But in a bit of a different era, I suppose, you would still give it, as much as I hate to say that as I watched it. But in terms of modern day, since we won promotion back to the Championship in 2002, only Kevin Doyle, Shane Long and Dave Kitson have got more goals than him in a season. That's lofty company. For in terms of Reading strikers, you know, that's more than someone like a Jason Roberts ever managed. It's more than Adam Lafondre ever made, more than a Pavel Pogrebniak scored. So he's done fantastically well.
Yeah, and that's, I think in that 2006 season, he's gone 17. I think that's probably the amount Doyle and Kitson both got. I think it was about 17, 18, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was I think it might have been 18. Yeah. But I'm not entirely positive.
So that's, I mean, he's more than likely to end up on 18 himself. And it kind of makes you rueful in a fact, because imagine if we'd have had a winger who was capable of getting 15 goals, or a midfielder who could get 10 goals more, or I suppose Swift has, but it just shows that the potential is there for the goal scoring. We're just not quite meeting it at the moment.
Yeah, is he still, if Reading were to stay in the Championship next season, is this a scenario, Becca, where you'd be absolutely happy with Jan leading the line again, or do you still think maybe they need to look in a slightly different direction?
Obviously, it's his last season next season. I think you have got to start exploring other options. I wouldn't be unhappy if he was leading the line again. I just think, like going back to what Mark said, if we've got someone who can score 17, 18 goals a season, it'd be nice to have someone else that could do exactly the same. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be good to get away from depending so much.
Absolutely.
On Kermigan. I think you're right in terms of you do notice his last season is winding
you
down.
You can't get away from the age thing. And I think back to Al Habsi, as we had him coming in this season, we're like, oh yeah, we'll have him as our goalkeeper, but really we're kind of looking elsewhere. And it'll certainly be that with Kermigan next season. If he's still our first choice striker in 12 months' time, then from here, you've got to ask questions about that.
Yeah, and the person I mentioned before, Trevor Morley, he scored, I think it's 23 goals in that season. The following year, was a season we ended up relegated. And I think Morley only managed something like 4 or 5 goals. Unfortunately, at that sort of age, it can very much fall quite quickly. But look, let's take absolutely nothing away from this season. That's what we've got to talk about. He's been fantastic. He's one of the big reasons. He's up there with the most games won in terms of a match-winning goal scenario. I think he's got 5 games where he's directly won us it. So you can't disagree with that entirely. And without that, we would certainly not be in the playoffs. If there is a downside to Saturday, other than the obvious joy of us going up and other than the downside, of course, that we send Wigan down. Best of luck next season, boys. Was that we were outshot 20-10 by a team 23rd in the division. And on the balance of play, I would have to say that I thought Wigan deserved at least a point from this. I thought Tyler Blackett and Chris Gunter in particular just seemed all at sea in the defence. But we've been asking this for the last couple of games, Becca, on this show. Is this a fair reflect? Can you really judge the Reading side in games like this where they kind of know they're over the line? Do you think that there was that sort of... Was this a Reading team playing 100% intensity?
I don't think so. I think I've seen us play better games this season and lost. I think you've got to look at the people that we're actually playing as well. We're playing, like you said, we're pretty much over the line two or three games ago. You've still got these teams that could potentially go down. And Wigan, obviously, they had to give everything on Saturday. And I'd say they definitely gave us a run for their money. And I'd agree with you. I think they at least deserved a point.
Yeah, it is always tough when you're fighting these really tough games. And to Reading's credit, you know, they finished off the job. You look at teams like Leeds that have played Burton and slipped up. So this wasn't a given. And Wigan have had a fantastic record at the Medeski in recent years. They've got a track record of turning up and ruining our party. So good to get the job done. Just one other talking point I wanted to look at. George Evans, who we talked about in the context of making that tackle on McDonald, coming in ahead of Danny Williams, who had a frustrating time up at Forest. He had an angry reaction after he was subbed. I don't think that was the reason he was dropped to the bench. But did George Evans do enough to suggest he should start going into the playoffs?
I think the thing is with Evans is he's come off the bench a couple of times and I've been impressed with him, certainly in a defensive context. But the maximum you're going to get from George Evans is like a 6.5-7. It's quite steady, but I can't imagine him being like a man of the match performance. Whereas Williams, for all that I kind of criticise him, I do recognise that he can bring out that 8 out of 10 performance. The game the other week against, when he made that incredible pass for Gunter, Rotherham game. He made that incredible pass for Gunter into Swift, and then that won us the game effectively. He can have those moments in his locker, which I don't think Evans has.
Yeah, he gives that little bit of extra oomph, does Danny Williams. Becca, any real headache for Stam in that department?
I think I'd always start with Williams if he was fit. I think he causes problems in the middle, whether he's playing well or not. I think he's just a bit of a wind-up merchant, isn't he? I think he runs after people. You know that you're always going to get a shift from Danny Williams. And when he came on Saturday, I thought he looked good. I thought he just sparked things up again. And yeah, I think I'd start Williams over Evans.
Yeah, and in the playoffs as well, you want those wind-up merchants because you want an opposition player to get sent off because that can win you the game and get you promoted.
Yeah, as long as you don't go too far.
As long as he's not the one getting sent off, then it's fine.
Yeah, if he gets sent off at Craven Cottage again, we will not be pleased. and as mentioned in Craven Cottage, that is because that actually is likely our destination in the playoff semi-finals. The results at the weekend, Huddersfield going down to a 2-0 defeat to Birmingham. They made 10 changes for that game, which could land them in hot water with the EFL. We're going to be talking about that in our pub chat extra on YouTube, so we won't go into it too much here. So they lost at Birmingham. Sheffield Wednesday won. Reading still winning means that they sit nicely in third in the league, going with one game left. We are a point clear of Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield, meaning that if we win on Sunday at Burton, we will finish third in the table. Fulham slipped up. They could only draw with Brentford, which means that they will definitely finish sixth now. So win and it is Fulham. Draw or lose, and it opens us up to play either Huddersfield or Sheffield Wednesday, and we'll get into all those permutations shortly in News Bites. But I said, for now, let's just enjoy it. We're there. We've made it. After all those long weeks and months of will we get over the line, are we going to do it, we don't even have to answer that question anymore. Mark, we're there.
We are there. It's official.
Absolutely. And I'm sure we're all looking forward to it, aren't we?
There is nothing more than I look forward to than a trip to Huddersfield at 12 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon.
Hey, it worked at Bradford.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, let's get into that. We've got lots to discuss in News White Security Player of the Season. We've got the under-23s, Orange Day, Callum Harriet, Royal Elm Park, takeovers and much, much more. It's the biggest News Bites had for a long while. So without further ado, we'll head there.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So as mentioned, this is a rather large News Bite. I can't remember having quite so many news items in one show, so let's go right into it. We'll start with the club's official Player of the Season vote being revealed, the winner for the second year running was Ali Alhabsi, who beat out Liam Moore and Jan Kermigan in the final three. First of all, before we go any further, a deserving winner for you two?
He's not had a bad season, has he? But I don't know, like, I just think we're third in the table, and like, it's the third season running now where a goalkeeper's won it. Like, I don't know, I think maybe someone else would have been nice.
Yeah, Mark, you can understand a goalkeeper winning it when we're finishing 17th and 19th in the table, but for a team that's possibly going to finish third.
I think it was Handbags who brought up on Twitter the fact that Shaka Hislop won it in the year we finished second in 95-96.
We did indeed, yeah. 94-95, yeah.
Sorry. And, I mean, in that context, if you've got a really good up-and-coming Premier League-class goalkeeper and he wins it in a team that was probably not having superstars, then that's kind of fair enough. In a team where you've got, I mean, England under 21 international midfielders, and Obita is an under 21 international. Kermigan scored 17 goals a season. McCleary had a cracking start to the season, tailed off. I think he probably suffered because it was that way around, not the other way around. I'm not sure how Habsy was quite my player of the season. I think he's just so popular.
He is. He is a ruddy, lovely bloke,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
goes a long way. And I can't begrudge him a single thing because he does some fantastic work on and off the field. Some of the charity work that he does back in Oman and over here is fantastic. And I can't wish it on a nicer bloke. But yeah, I think I agree with both of you. In terms of performances, there were a lot of other candidates. What I found really interesting is we ran in mid-February on thetylerstand.com a poll for your player of the season so far. In that result, and bear in mind, we're only talking sort of 10 weeks ago now, the winner was Liam Moore, who, again, finished in the top three. Second place, Gareth McCleary. And in third was Ali Alhabsi. Now, I'm trying to think, since then, I think the voting may have opened up around about that when he had that cracking game against Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wonder if it's one of those things where a recency sort of having that in your head has won it for him. Do you think there's a bit of that, or am I reading too much into
it? No, definitely, because McCleary was second in our vote in February. He won't be second in our vote at the end of the season because he's tailed off at the end of the year. And as we just said, a lot of that's down to injuries. So, these things always happen. It comes to the Ballon d'Or arguments, they all have the same recency bias sort of thing. It's you do get round about the right thing, but I do wager that, as has happened most of the season, the Tylehurst End player of the season will differ from the official player of the season.
Yeah, do you think it's the official club one should be held until after all the games have been played, Becca, or are you still a fan of getting it in early so you can present it in that last home game?
It's nice to present it. I think it's nice to be able to do it in front of obviously like a crowd, and for them to get the recognition they obviously deserve. I think when did the official one opened up? I think I voted at the Leeds game.
I said it would have been around just after that Sheffield
Wednesday.
They have
to have people voting at the home games and then they want to present it at the end, don't they?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, when it closes with like two or three games left to go, I think, going back to the Kermigan thing, like, he's now scored 17 goals. If that had been like the vote had been left longer, I'm pretty sure that, well, not pretty sure, but there's that possibility that Kermigan may have won it, or anyone else. So
yeah, I think if you look in sort of, you know, Kermigan gets bags of brace against Burton and scores the winner at Wembley, it almost kind of looks
that sealed then, isn't it?
Kind of looks ridiculous that he hasn't won it. But obviously you can't take that into account. You can't base it on you're going to make the playoffs with 2 months to go. But you know, at the end of the day, I said he's not an unworthy winner.
Oh, no.
It wouldn't have been my choice, but you know, it's just one of those things. It's nice for him. I don't think he's going back to that Shaka Hislop season. That was the first season I watched Reading, and Shaka was just immense. You just got that feeling that you were never going to beat Shaka Hislop. But it's just another quirk of the whole season that we're giving it to a goalkeeper when our defence has conceded a relegation pace goals away from home. Not that too many of them would be his fault, but still, the defence hasn't exactly covered itself in glory this season. But anyway, isn't that winning? So congratulations to Ali Alhabsi. As mentioned, we will have our own Tylehurst End Player of the Season vote after the conclusion of the season, whether that ends in the playoff semi-finals or after Wembley. So we will, and we'll all put forward our own case as we do most seasons. So stay tuned for that one. Right, takeover talk. I really, really wish I didn't have to talk about this anymore, because it seems that ever since we've started this podcast, not a week goes by without someone trying to buy the club or not buy the club or sell the club or not sell the club. The very latest comes from an interview that Tiger did with BBC Radio Berkshire's Andrew Peach last week. It was a very interesting article, an interview, which you can go read the highlights of up on the Talisman website. The basic nuts and bolts of it were, he said that they may not necessarily sell a majority stake in the club to the Chinese consortium, as had been widely reported since day one. He said nothing has been fully discussed, it's all in negotiation at the moment. He was also asked about Lady Sassamer's claim, one of his co-owners, that they didn't have enough money to keep funding the club. He didn't exactly deny that, but he didn't exactly agree with it either. He sort of feels that she maybe got a bit confused. He also just sort of explained that they want partners. They're not interested in selling and running. So, Mark, from all of this, I'm just more confused than I was before.
Yeah, it continues to be politics played behind closed doors, and I'm on the other side of the door, so I couldn't tell you anything, though, basically.
Becca, are you more or less worried after hearing Tiger's latest interview?
I wouldn't say there was any need to be any more worried. I mean, it's always a good sign if you've got potential interest in the club. Yeah, it'd just be nice if there was some kind of conclusion to it sometime soon.
Yeah, he was asked about the whole will you be denied Premier League promotion. He sort of said, no, it's not going to happen. They're, if they have to walk away from this takeover, they will continue to support the club. So certainly on the surface, you know, you can only take him at his word. That is a good thing. Linked to all this, of course, is the Royal Elm Park development. Now, the plans were formally voted on by Reading Council last week now, and they've given it their approval. There were a few talking points, but they've deferred it now to the head of planning after giving it their sort of basic consent. There were concerns from people like Sport England, who were disappointed that the club would be losing the training dome, but those concerns were eased when the club said they'd build another one at the Forest School. Transport was a big sticking point as well, and the club have released their plans that they will subsidise buses and trains for fans to get to the game, to offset the loss of several hundred parking spaces.
Interesting on this, because I was looking through the official council detailing, basically. The train plans, the free train area, goes all the way to Newbury and Henley and Slough. It covers a big distance, and I'm not entirely sure who's going to be paying for that, because if the club win the championship, that's a lot of money to be forking over.
Becca, am I right in saying, because you've been there a couple of times, am I right in saying that Brighton do something similar to the Amex?
It's a massive area as well. It's like Hayward's Heath, Lewis, and then I think it's Worthing the other way. So that's and that's buses, trains, and that's included within your match ticket.
Wow.
So
yeah, that'd be the same for us.
It's I mean, Brighton's just an obscene place to pay for parking anyway, and I think it's a great thing for fans. It's you don't have to worry about how you get into a match, and it's definitely a good thing. It's like it kind of pays back the fans' loyalty as well, I guess.
Yeah.
In that respect, I guess.
Any concerns though that the club might they're initially offering to subsidise this, but is there any concern that long term it will sort of get absorbed into the cost of match day prices?
It could always do. I think certainly one of the interesting things I picked up on was the fact that they are also planning on the fact that this 36,000 total capacity upgrade that we've been much touted about every time we're about to get relegated is still part of the plans and was talked about in the official council plans. What was quite interesting, they said that basically they're going to have to supply 900 or so people's buses to replace the car park that's going to go. If the stadium gets increased, the event management has been approved for the buses to then cover 15,000 people, because that is the exact amount that the stadium will increase by. So you can tell the event planning hasn't quite thought through the stadium increase, but it is still there in the paperwork.
Yeah, you just see wall-to-wall buses going off down the relief road.
Through the buses, basically.
Absolutely.
Interestingly, I will be talking to someone from the council on Thursday night, which will go up on the Tarlest End. So
yeah.
We'll have some detailed coverage, hopefully, coming from that.
Absolutely, one to look out for. And, of course, we'll keep you right up to date. I mean, the other good things as well. They talked about it will create 1,000 jobs. And they're also going to let fans help vote for the street names.
Streety McStreet.
Streety McStreet, yeah. I very much suggest the Tilehurst End Avenue myself.
Yeah, or we can just rename on the stands. We could have a stand at Reading called the Tilehurst End. That'd be a really good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's never been done before.
Yeah, it's almost genius.
Absolutely, I like it. We'll go for it. And we'll have an unprofessional joke of a side street and stuff like that. Anyway, and some more unfortunate news. Callum Harriott, the Reading winger, he's had to have further surgery. He's had a hamstring issue since that Fulham fogged off game just after Christmas, and while he's had several attempts to come back, it's not worked. He's had to go back in for surgery. Yapstam says he's going to be out for a long time. No specific timescale given, but Becca, it's really sad because he finally seems to be sort of making his way in that first team squad.
Definitely. I mean, what we saw of him just before he got injured at that abandoned game, he was looking good. I mean, he scored a couple of goals, and I mean, he added something else down the wing. I think he was quick. And it's a shame that he's out, but hopefully he can just come back and be stronger. And I mean, obviously it'll take time to build back up again, but hopefully it just doesn't knock his confidence, because he was doing good before that.
Yeah, did you see enough of him in the first half of the season, Mark, to make you think that he's going to make it at this level?
Well, definitely at Championship level. If we, you know, hypothetical scenario, don't go up and then he's fit for the pre-season, then I definitely have him as part of the squad. But, I mean, it's the hamstring injury, and hamstring injuries are probably the worst ones to come back from in terms of muscle injuries. And if we do get promoted, then he's going to really struggle to get inside a Premier League team.
Yeah, we wish Callum very well and a speedy recovery. Back into better things. Orange Day, people. This is a suggestion by Ben Greenwood, who is the rather awesome person responsible for the Yapstam Batman animation and some of the funky, awesome graphics you see on our Tarlest End YouTube channel, as well as on this very website. Our new logo was designed by Ben, and he came up with the idea of having an Orange Day at Burton for the final game of the season to honour Yapstam and our Dutch contingent. So wearing orange wigs, orange shirts, whatever you can do, in sort of inspired by a very similar thing we did 16 years ago now for the first leg of our playoff semi-final away at Wigan. We were wearing orange kits back then, and we all went up to Wigan, filled one half of the stadium, it seemed, in orange. I have seen a couple of snipey people on social media saying that this is a bad thing. Can either of you offer a bad reason, or am I just being overly positive?
I mean, last away game of the season is Inflatables Day as well. So as long, yes, as people bring inflatables and something orange, I'll be happy with it. I wouldn't want the inflatables to go.
But orange, I mean, beach balls.
Yeah, exactly. We qualify for the playoffs, and it's a complete dead rubber of a game. I mean, it's going to decide whether we go to X or Y in the playoffs, but it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things from this point. So yeah, it's just something to enjoy.
Are you going to crack some orange out, Becca?
I've already dug out my Netherlands away shirt from...
Excellent.
Yeah. It's white, but it's got like the tinge of orange, so I'm styling it. Yeah.
Very nice. As I said, a couple of people have said, oh, it's rubbish, why are we doing this, pointless? It's a bit of fun at the football. It's a chance to like do something fun. I mean, Hartlepool do it every season. They dress up, they were mimes when they're...
Yeah. Yeah.
They've been penguins, they've been all sorts. It's just a bit of fun. Just, you know, no one's forcing you to wear orange. If you're one of these people that don't want to get in the spirit, fine. But just let people have a bit of fun.
It should be a good atmosphere, Burton, because they've secured safety, and yes, no one thought they were going to do that. So they should be... It shouldn't have, like... I'm a bit annoyed by the kind of constant teams shouting at each other at away games, and it should be, like, a good atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, get that orange out and join in the fun. We might as well. Anyway, that game will be followed by the playoffs. And the dates have been confirmed by the EFL this week. Well, we already knew the dates, but they've sort of announced which ties are going to be when. The nuts and bolts of this are, if we finish third, the first leg will be away on Saturday, May the 13th at Fulham with a 5:30 kickoff, and we'll bring them back to the Medeski Stadium on Tuesday at 7:45. If we finish fourth or fifth, the first leg is going to be on the Sunday, which is the 14th, with a midday kickoff, with a second leg at 7:45 p.m. Obviously, depending on whether we finish fourth or fifth will depend on the order of those two. I think I speak for all of us in saying that I really, really now hope we don't finish fourth, because that would mean a trip to Yorkshire for 12 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bugger, that, isn't it?
Yeah, as we mentioned at the top of the show, that Bradford game, I think there were quite a few bleary-eyed Reading fans at that one.
Yeah, I'm a bit annoyed because if Fulham would have finished fourth or fifth and we'd have finished fourth, then I could have gone to the away game, but I can't go to an away game on 5:30 on Saturday. So
yeah,
there's nothing I can do now, sadly.
Are either of you two still worried about Fulham in terms of, because I immediately after the game on Saturday when it looked like we were going to, you know, we had third in our hands because on paper we should win at Burton. Are you worried about facing Fulham, Becca? Or is this a scenario where you kind of hope Yatfield's a bit of a weakened side? I mean, we'll get on to team selection later, but are you still happy to finish third?
I think with the playoffs, yeah, it's great if you can go into them, obviously, on a high, winning games and things. But I think the playoffs are anyone's games. I think it's a bit of luck in the playoffs. I think if the team, whichever team turns up on the day is the team that's going to win, and that's not going to matter whether Fulham have beaten us 5-0 away or whatever. That I don't think the playoffs really have any kind of resemblance to what's gone on for the rest of the season.
It's a big reset button.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's no pattern. I think the only thing that I might have said this on the show before, the only thing that I can see is if you've just missed out on automatic promotion, then it might harm your chances in the playoffs. Anything else, there is no correlation to any kind of success.
So that 5-0 defeat at Craven Cottage will hold no relevance.
Well, I haven't looked into seeing if any playoff winners have lost 5-0 at the team they've beaten in the final before in the season. Obviously, we lost both times to Swansea that year. We lost to them. I don't know how we did against Bolton.
We beat them at home 2-1, and I think we might have lost at Burnley.
Yeah, see, I mean, at the end of the day, Reading will lose in the final no matter what, so it doesn't matter how we go into it.
Well, there we go. I can think of no better point to move on. Talking of finals, the under-23s are into the Premier League Cup final. They beat Norwich 4-1 at the Radetzky Stadium on Sunday to book their place. They will face Swansea in that final. A fairly strong-looking team, Becca. You've got some familiar names on that under-23 team sheet. Anzi Yacola, Tanai Watson, Rob Dickey. You've got Josh Barrett, who we saw bits and pieces last season, and Yaku Mata as well. So a good, promising crop.
Oh, for sure. It's always good to see any kind of, whether it's under-18s, under-23s, like doing well. I was following it on Twitter, and I mean, I think the under-23s have had a bit of a funny season in terms of going up a couple of goals and then kind of throwing it away. And yeah, it's great to see them do well. And it's obviously be nice next season if maybe they could start appearing on benches and things again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's of course, against a sad backdrop of the fact they're likely to be relegated out of the top division of Premier League 2. They go into the final game of the season, bottom of the table. They need to win and have results go their way. So it's a kind of a nice sort of crash mat for them, I guess, in terms of at least you win a trophy. And there are some very talented teams in both tiers, so it's not a massive one. So just nice for them to get that experience. Again, I did a piece going into that game looking at what happened to the last team that won this competition. And at the moment, only Liam Kelly from the 2014 squad is in the first team. So hopefully a few more of them can make the step up this time around. Anyway, that does conclude this week's News Bites. We've got a rather big mailbag considering we won a game. It's always usually very thin on the ground we win, but this week we've got lots to get to. So let's head there. We'll head to the mailbag right now.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So a big, big thank you to everyone who's contributed to the mailbag this week. You can join in by tweeting us at the Tarlhurst End. You can head to facebook.com/thetarlhurstend and send us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. And of course, do check out our new YouTube channel. As I mentioned earlier, we will be tackling another pub chat extra topic. So head over to youtube.com/thetarlhurstend for that. We also do post-game shows, sometimes a pre-game show, and lots of bits and pieces in between. So we're going to try and grow that over the next season or so. So head on over there and give it a subscribe. Anyway, mailbag. Evan Collins, which five players would you like to take our penalties if the playoff final goes to a shootout?
Not Kermigant.
Are we allowed, hold on, can I just clarify, are we allowed to score rebounds at a penalty shootout?
if we're playing Fulham, then I wouldn't worry about it, because Fulham always miss their penalties, don't they?
Yeah,
not Kermigant, because he had that awful one for Leicester in the Cardiff playoff semi-final in about 2000, and let's pluck a year,
2010, 2011, was it?
Something like that, yeah. He Panenka'd it, and he got awfully saved, and that lost them the game, didn't it?
But he is our regular penalty taker now.
Yeah, and he Panenka'd one onto the bar earlier in the season as well, didn't he? I just have bad visions. I'll remember this clip in case it comes to...
So would you genuinely not have him in your top five penalty takers?
Probably not, no.
No? Okay. Becca, who would be the first name for you?
I don't know. I would have Kermigan in my top five, though.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
Maybe not like... Well, no, I would, because he's our regular penalty taker. I'd put him in first or second. Okay. Gareth McCleary doesn't film with confidence with penalties anymore. No. But again, I would still probably chuck him in like fourth or fifth.
Everyone's missed one. McCleary's missed one as well. Williams, sorry.
I've always thought Jordan Obita must be able to take a good penalty. I've never seen him take one, obviously, but...
I'd give one to Gunter. I reckon he's got a calm head.
Experienced. Could you... I would say no, simply for... Could you imagine the reaction of a certain group of Reading fans if Chris Gunter misses the key penalty in a playoff final?
No, I don't. I wouldn't want to think about it.
A certain section of social media would implode if he kept us out of the Premier League. But no, maybe. I'll just give it to Ali Al-Habsi.
Yeah. No, I give one to like Liam Moore or someone like that. I reckon I could trust them. It's more mental, isn't it, than technical.
I reckon Joe Vandenberg would be able to take a good penalty.
Yeah. He'd top bin it, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Just casual as you like. It's so difficult. I imagine it's just a mental thing. It's who's at a certain stage of the game, who's got the energy, who's at it. You ideally want to pick people that are on highs from the game, if they've had a good game or they've come into it on form sort of thing.
I do remember quickly years ago when we played Stoke away in the League Cup. It was like second round or something. Yeah. I mean, it was a penalty shootout. Me and my dad were listening to it on the radio.
I was there, I think.
And we had to score the penalty. If we missed it, we went out. And Leroy Lita stepped up. And me and my dad went, that's it, we're out. And he blasted it over the bar. We got knocked out.
Sounds.
Sometimes you know.
Sounds very Leroy. God damn it, Leroy. So I can't really answer that. Lord knows he'll be on the pitch at that time anyway. Can I get Jimmy Quinn back just to take penalties? I'll have Quinny. He was a good penalty taker.
Well, Scott Sinclair, he's taken a few good penalties at Wembley, hasn't he?
Yeah, unfortunately. Let us know your thoughts on that. Who would be in your top five? Daniel Harrington says, what do you want to see Reading do in the semis? Would you rather we got McShane back for the away leg and went for it? He says, I would rather we got McShane back for the away leg and went for it in the home leg.
Going for it in the home leg is risky on the basis that we're not very good away generally. So if we're playing at home first, is that what I'm saying? So
I think you're saying you chuck in the extra defender for the away leg and sort of shut up shop and really then go for it in the home leg.
Well, yeah, I mean, I take a 0-0 with anywhere in the away leg first time out. That goes without saying, I think.
Yeah, it's difficult. I do Reading know how to play for a 0-0? I don't think... Yap has always said his goal is to score... Funny as it sounds, to score more goals than the opposition. He attacks first and then worries about defending later.
I'm not sure we've had many 0-0s this season, have we?
Yeah, Barnsley at home was terrible.
Yeah, see, that's at home as well. You don't want that. You don't want a 0-0 first leg.
I personally... Considering how badly we've been roasted away from home most of the season, I wouldn't be adverse to sticking an extra defender in there. Mm. Whether that's Paul McShane, again, we'll talk about the Burton game, but if he doesn't play before then, it's a very tough ask asking someone to come in after 2 months out and play in a high-pressure game like this, no matter how experienced they are. I think if you're in a scenario where it's desperate times, like you've literally got nobody fit, then yeah, maybe, but otherwise...
I'd have him on the bench.
Yeah, on the bench. I mean, if he needs to come on and he needs to hold out for 10 minutes at the end, can we get Jake Cooper back for that? Although he's involved in the playoffs as well now with Millwall. So
we have got a lot of centre-backs anyway, to be fair. We've got, if Vandenberg's fit, then we've got Ilori, Oxford, the two we're currently playing, Blackett and Moore.
Yeah.
There's options though, isn't there?
Yeah, as I said, if you give me the choice between a slightly safety conscious or a gung-ho away from home, I'm certainly going to go safety conscious against Fulham. Especially because they break. Their power to hit you on the break is just devastating. Alex Stone. Is Burton the perfect chance to play Watson, Ilori, Mendes, Mata, etc. in case they are needed for the playoffs? We're going to defer that for any other business. Louis Burton says, getting ahead of myself here, but starting 11 at Wembley, assuming Vandenberg, McShane and McCleary are fit. There's lots of questions there and chief among them, can any of those players be fully fit in two games or three games?
We don't know how close they are. That's the problem. They always, especially going into the playoffs, it wouldn't surprise me if they're just holding back a couple of these players just to keep them in reserve. I mean, I'll play Vandenberg because he offers something different. I'm not sure I play McCleary, as I said earlier in the show. And McShane would have to be 90 minutes fit.
Okay, well, let's assume they are all fit then, Becca. We'll go through a team. I think we could all say we'd pick out Alio Habsi as your goalkeeper. Chris Gunter's probably going to beat out Adrian Popper for right back. Left back, well, were you going to go for, would you go for three centre backs or would you go for two?
Wembley's just a one shot game, isn't it? So I think maybe two at the back, two in the middle. Yeah.
It would be your two.
Moore and Blackett, I think.
No, McShane, even if he's fully fit?
If he's fully fit, then obviously McShane, but on the basis that he probably won't be, it's got to be Blackett.
Okay.
And then obviously a B to left back.
Who's your midfield trio, central midfield trio?
Williams, Swift and Kelly, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the three leading the line, Kermigan, I think it's a given.
For sure.
Behrens and McCleary's been the popular choice this season for Yap. Those two make you throw in a wild card of a Grabban.
See, Grabban and when I was at Forest the other week, Grabban and Kermigan played well together. They've played together at Bournemouth and they know each other's strengths. And I wouldn't be opposed to seeing them starting to get. Obviously, if McCleary's fully fit, then you go for McCleary every single time. But I don't think it's the end of the world if it is Grabban that starts.
Yeah. So fairly, the team just seems to pick itself, Mark. Any changes from that lineup for you?
No, I'd agree with the 11. The only thing, I'd be inclined to go with Vandenberg, should he be fit, in a kind of back three system, and then just have Swift and Williams as the two central midfielders.
So no place for Liam Kelly?
No, because the problem I have with Kelly is that when he played against Newcastle in the home game earlier in the season, he did kind of just not settle. He was kind of playing the occasion far more than the game, and that is the one thing that they say not to do at Wembley. So that's why I'd West Ham.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, Mark. Sorry, Becca.
It's okay.
I'd go for that extra defensive muscle.
And Kelly off the bench has been really good at times this season, hasn't he?
Well, he changed it. I remember going to Bristol City and he completely changed that game when he came on. And if you are a team that are looking, if you're a team especially that's dealing with a team that are then sitting back, say Reading are chasing a game, he's the perfect player to try and pick a pass for you. So, yeah, I would go with that extra muscle of Vandenberg. Having Vandenberg and Williams in the same team, I think, is a good thing. Getting that trio of McShane, Vandenberg and Moore together would be a lovely thing to have at Wembley. Otherwise, I can't really disagree team-wise. Moving along, Clive Ratton. Anyone have any idea if the club plans to relay the pitch in the summer, takeover or no takeover? Now, Mark, I've got memories of someone somewhere along the line from the club saying they were going to relay this. But I don't know whether that's official or it's just rumour.
I think there might have been talk of it like ages ago, but as far as I'm aware, it certainly, if we don't go up and there's no takeover, you can kiss that goodbye.
Yeah, it's about £500,000, I think they've said.
Exactly,
to completely relay it. And it's not been properly done since, I think just after we won the league with 106 points.
Yeah, it's been a while. We would have to get promoted and or have a takeover for it to be even a chance. And even then, with the way that takeovers go, if the Chinese are still getting their feet under the table, then it'll probably get pushed to the next summer anyway. So I can't see how.
Would you sacrifice a £500,000 signing for a better pitch?
Well, yeah, if Premier League, £500,000 signing isn't going to get you very much.
But say we're still in the Championship and you've got a choice of signing a £500,000 player, say another, I don't know, whatever, a new right back or a pitch relayed, what are you doing? What's more important, the pitch or the player?
I probably have the pitch.
Becca?
I think I'll go pitch as well.
Yeah, I think I'm
especially
gonna,
with Stam.
Yeah, I'm going to clean sweep it. Yeah, that pitch is, I said earlier, it looked like a scene out of the classic Mega Drive game Desert Strike.
Yeah.
And it's just a sea of sand with a little bit of grass poking out in between.
It's not bad maintenance. It's not anything else, just lack of investment is 100%.
The ground staff are doing the very best they can, but they're dealing with, a 10-year-old pitch that also has a load of rugby people running all over it. They're doing the best they can. Nick Houghton, Stephen Quinn, what's going on? Has he a future? Does Stan rate him? Should we cut our losses? Big fan of him, but injury record frustrating. Well, he's got 1 year left on his deal, I believe.
Is he out of contract at the end?
No, I think he's got...
So he's one year. I don't know if that's an option or if there's any more, but... I mean, I like him. I wish he wasn't as injured as he is because I think he'd offer, certainly in a three-man midfield, offers a lot. And I think he'd suit Stan relatively well also because he's relatively technical and he runs quite hard. So I would stick with him. Cutting our losses, it's a question of who's going to take him.
Exactly.
As well.
He's absolute rock bottom value. No one's going to pay a fee for him, really.
Becca, what do you make of him? Do you think he's a Stam kind of player?
I think he's got something to offer in any team. I mean, we've seen like good qualities from him. And yeah, just going back to that point, it's just a shame that he is so injured. He just adds something else. And yeah, it is a shame.
Yeah, my love for Stephen Quinn is well known on this show. I expressed it many a time, so I'm completely biased here. I can't offer a rational opinion on Quinny, but do I think it, with his injury record, is he going to make a big impact in the Premier League? Probably not. I think at this sort of stage, he's almost at J-Tab sort of levels. He's a useful player at Championship level, but has it just all got to him? And can he kick on again? Maybe not, but I kind of almost just see it as, you know, it's a one-season kind of freebie, because
yeah, in a sense we've got nothing to lose.
Exactly, you might as well play him for next, or keep him on the books next season, see what he does, and either you're gonna, you know, release him on a free at the end of that season, or someone might pick him up in January. So hopefully he comes back. He's in terms of what's going on, Stam said he's had a problem with his knee, came back, played in the under 23s, and that caused a problem in his other knee. Something that can obviously happen for a long time when you know you've got a problem with one knee, you're putting too much pressure on another part of your body, then that goes. So unfortunately that's just the case of what's happened with Stephen, but fingers crossed he can come back. If not, hard to imagine him being involved this season, but certainly next. Not the Top 20 Pod, a fantastic podcast, as I have to tip my cap to them, as much as I only want you to listen to one podcast out there. If you do have to listen to another, listen to theirs.
Hey, if we can plug podcasts, can I plug my other podcast?
Yeah, of course you can.
It's Spanish Football, Marco English, get on that. Eye on La Liga.
I'm editing this in post and just saying the Tyler's Den Podcast Extra.
Yeah, it'll just, when I say it's this, and then it'll just be your voice saying Tyler's Den Extra.
Yeah, absolutely. No, go check it out. Where can they download that, Mark?
Audio Boom or iTunes, or just on the Market English website.
Excellent. But yes, Not the Top 20 Pod. They cover the whole of the Football League. They said, what do you guys think about Liam Kelly? Is the hype we've given him on the podcast justified? And what are his flaws? Now, I responded to this directly on Twitter, and the only two things I could really think of off the top of my head were his height means he's not great in the air, although he's not terrible, and he's not massively speedy either. He's not going to out-sprint somebody. Can you think of any other sort of weaknesses? Are the ones I've listed even flaws?
I think mentally he's got a little bit to learn, because he's quite young, obviously. He's got to learn to pace himself a bit more in games, perhaps, and be more of a 90-minute player. But no, I don't think... His diminutive stature is to his advantage when opponents underestimate him, I believe. If he was a big lad, if he had the... as certain midfielders, like you pick out... He's like a
Leisurewood,
like a Pogba, let's say. Oh, okay. If he looks like Paul Pogba and he had that power behind him, people would say, oh, he's going to dictate games. But because he doesn't, he's more of a Verratti type player.
Okay. Becca?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think obviously there was that game earlier on in the season. Oh, I can't remember.
Up at Rotherham?
Yeah, when he got substituted in the first half. And I think you can see how much he's grown as a player just from that. I think he does have a lot to offer, and yeah, I think I agree in terms of the height thing is a flaw, but probably works to his advantage as well. So yeah.
But is the hype justified then? Because we've kind of gone back and forth a little bit on Kelly. There was also that real hype around Christmas, and he's just slightly sort of died back down again. What do you see his ceiling as now? Now we've had the chance to watch him over, say, 30 games. Do you think he's going to achieve Gylfi Sigurdsson type levels? Is he a Steve Sidwell type player? Is he more of a James Harper sort of level? What sort of level is he going to pan out? Where do you see his future?
Can't see it at Gylfi level, because remember when Gylfi came into the team, he was instant goal scoring, 20 goals a season for his one season, wasn't he? So I don't think he's at that level. Not necessarily that type of player anyway, because he plays a little bit further back. I mean, he's the type of player where if he stays with Reading for 3-4 years and he's first team and he's impressing and Reading don't go up, then there's a chance that a good Championship team will take a punt, or a lower Premier League team will take a punt on him. He has the ability to keep pushing on, but then, as we always say with these things, it's up to his mental ability and how much he can cope with the pressure and his own expectations of himself and all the other things that come of being a footballer these days. That's the telling thing, and that's kind of the thing that we as fans don't know about.
If you had to put money on it, Becca, where would he be in 5 years? Premier League, Championship?
I think I'd probably go good Championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's his lower end. I think he's at least going to be a good Championship player. I liken him, again, maybe it's just the physical thing, almost to Liam Britton at Swansea. Yeah. I think you look at Leon, he was a player that was given a chance because Swansea were in a lower division, and he just sort of stayed with them and worked his way up. I find it hard to imagine Kelly getting picked up by a Premier League club now. Or at least in the next couple of seasons. I find it hard to believe that a team would just pluck him and put him in their starting lineup.
Yeah, I think that'd be hard. I also think that he's quite similar to Will Hughes in the Derby.
Yes.
They had a gap. They weren't a particularly good team when he came through into the team. And now they are a good team. And the fact he's English obviously has pushed up his value and made the transfer talk quite prevalent. But he's very much cemented himself in that Derby team and is talked about as a Premier League player as a result of the circumstances as much as anything else.
Yeah, I think he needs that opportunity. He just needs to play games week in, week out. I don't think he's the type of player that's going to develop, you know, by playing 10, 15 Premier League games. I think he's much better off playing 40-odd in the Championship for another season or two and then seeing where he goes. Or even maybe going up to Scotland. I mean, you look at what it's done for someone like a Dembele or a Scott Sinclair. Maybe that is the league. I know Rangers were linked with him earlier in the season, but maybe he just sort of needs to take a slightly sideways step before he moves up. But hopefully he's going to be Reading for a long time anyway. In terms of, is the hype justified? Yes, I think yes. Paul Hawkins, want to know about the training ground and if and when it is happening. At the moment it is all on hold while the takeover is being discussed. So they're not obviously committing money while that's still going on. They've bought the land. The land is ours, but there is no work happening at the moment. In terms of it needs to happen. Work needs to start within, if you consider this season done, within the next two seasons after this, or else the club will automatically lose that Category 1 academy status. Part of retaining it is that the work has at least started. It doesn't have to be finished, but there has to be quite sizable progress being made. But again, if the takeover doesn't happen, losing those parachute payments, there is that danger that it just all sort of stalls, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying to Paul, he's not the only one who wants to know if anything's happening, because there isn't, as far as I'm aware, anything happening. And that Academy 1 status, with the dome going, I think there's a chance that will affect our ability to hold that status. If this gets continually pushed back, if the takeover doesn't happen, if we, you know, don't go up or even get relegated, then it's very much likely to go.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it desperately does need to happen. I mean, I was lucky enough to go along to Hogwood recently, and, you know, the playing surfaces and everything are fantastic, but it's still, you know, you compare it to the likes, you know, the state-of-the-art training grounds you see at places like Tottenham and Chelsea and Manchester City, and it's, it's very much an inferior sort of product. But that's the sort of limitations they've got. Any sort of concerns for you, Becca?
It would be a shame to kind of lose that category status. I think the club's kind of worked hard to get that there. I think it's a difficult one. I think, like you said, it's not the worst place in the world, but it'd be nice if there was facilities that can compete with the best ones up there. So, yeah.
The demands are so high now, aren't they? Like in training grounds, I was reading someone in 442 saying that basically training grounds in the early 90s were effectively like parks. So your teams like Arsenal were training on public land effectively, and there's absolute astronomical the things like Man City's campus at the moment, the thing that Liverpool are building, and the chances that we have of competing with that in the Championship are nil, but in the Premier League or with a financial backer, you hope that there's a chance that we'd at least keep the academy status.
I think when all the money was going back to Brighton, I think when all the money was pumped in there, I think their training facilities down there, I think they've got to be up there with some of the best in the Championship, and obviously that's worked to their advantage in the last few seasons.
Yeah, you need to have the best possible facilities to attract that type of player and to keep players coming into the academy as well. Moving along, Chris Ballard says, what are the contract situations at the club? who would stay in the summer depending on playoff result? Well, looking at the contract dates, people that are up in the end of the season. So you've got Stuart Moore, the young goalkeeper, his contract is up. You've got Zach Jules, another young defender. His contract is up in the summer. At the moment, you've got Rob Dickey and Dom Hyam. Although I thought Rob Dickey signed a new deal. Maybe he didn't.
Rings a bell. It's hard to keep track of because they don't always say.
Yeah, but we'll go by what we've got in front of us. So those two are also out of contract as well. Sean Long. Danny Williams is the only real senior first team player. Tariq Fosu's deal is reportedly up at the end of this season as well. I think there's an option there, though. But we'll again presume it that's up. Aaron Cole, Craig Tanner, Andrea Novakovic. Sorry. Those are the only sort of names that people would have really heard of. And out of those, you have to really say that Tariq Fosu and maybe Rob Dickey and Danny Williams are about the only three that really made any sort of impression on the senior team.
I think Stuart Moore will probably get a new deal. I think they rate him relatively highly, don't they? And I think that Zach Jules, is he on loan at Motherwell? Or
he is playing
in the SPFL, which is obviously a good level. So if he's made a decent impression, then I certainly expect they'll keep him on. But the rest of them, I mean, I kind of don't expect Fosu to stay purely because they'd have given him a new contract by now if they really thought that he was as good as some fans think he is. Cool, I can't imagine him staying. And Craig Tanner's one of those players that will probably get offered a deal to go and play first team football at Plymouth or somewhere where he's been on loan because he's made an impression there.
Yeah, it's hard to see him walking straight into the team. Becca, any of those names for you? People you think they must tie down no matter what?
I think it's pretty inevitable with Danny Williams. If we don't go up, then he's going to go, which I think that's... I think I'd be quite sad to see him go. I think he's been good for the club. But those same kind of names that have been pinged around just now.
Yeah, it's really difficult with people like Dom Hyam and Rob Dickey because they're players that have come through the academy with good hype. They've, you know, done well out on loan. Rob Dickey had a great loan spell with Cheltenham. And, you know, we got to see him in that game at Blackburn at the end of last season as well. So, but it's how many players you can keep around the group on the basis of, well, they might make an impression. They're at that sort of stage now that Reading got to with people like Simon Cox. Johnny Hayes is having a great time up at Aberdeen. People like that, Angus McDonald, who we've seen bounce back. Sometimes you just can't keep them around the group. I mean, you look at the depth chart at the moment of these positions and how many players have to be injured for these players to be coming in.
Yeah, especially at centre-back. We were saying a minute ago, we spent our club record fee on a centre-back.
Yeah.
So what does that say to Tom Hyman and Rob Dickey saying, oh, you're out of contract, but we'll give you, you know, a couple hundred quid a week to stick around and go on loan to League Two again if you fancy it, or they can go and chance their arm on a full-time basis. Yeah,
and that's obviously discounting the players that are coming up from beneath them as well in the youth ranks. So it's a tough case. You can only keep players on for so long. Again, I mean, there's three very talented centre-backs there that we're talking about in Jules, Dickey and Hyam. I could see one of them getting a new deal, maybe two. You're definitely not going to give all three of them. So it's difficult. And again, the team's status is going to play a massive part in that. Again, you might be more inclined to give them an extra year if you are in the Championship than you're in the Premier League. So we'll have to see how that all works. And Chris Hartley, obviously his thoughts on Player of the Season. He says, in my opinion, Jan Koenig was robbed in the Player of the Year voting. 17 goals, countless headers away. Tyler's work ethic for most of the season has been feeding off scraps. Adel Habsi won it, but I feel Jan has been more important at times this season. Well, we've covered most of that, I think, Chris. And he did offer a pub chat extra topic as well that I might take for one of the editions over the summer, talking about what is the favourite kits. So always a good topic. Anyway, that wraps up a bumper mailbag. We'll move on now to Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So 45 games later, we are down to just one regular season game left in the Championship. That is away at Burton. They are 19th in the Championship. They're safe on 52 points under Nigel Clough. Their last six games, they've won 2, drawn 2, lost 2. So in a nice middling form. But they've been very good at the Pirelli Stadium this year. They have beaten Leeds, Derby, Norwich and Sheffield Wednesday, all in front of crowds of around 6,000. So it's a nice, intimate setting for hopefully an Orange Day. You look up and down that team though, Becca, and there are a few familiar names from Championship rivals past.
Yeah, there's a few that kind of ring bells, and they're just I'm pleased. It's always nice to kind of see teams that I guess they were expected to come up like last season and just go straight back down again this season, but to actually see them. And I think it said a lot about the club that, I mean, Nigel Clough had offers from elsewhere and he wanted to stay and see the job through. I think it's just going to be a good day on Saturday. It's just going to be
Yeah, Mark, our old chum Stephen Bywater in net for them.
Yeah, I was just
always friendly to Reading.
It's cracking team, isn't it? Lloyd Dyer, Michael Kitely, Kyle McFadden, Luke Varney, all these players that you forgot existed, isn't it? It's cracking. It's good they found a home, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the island of misfit toys in the Championship.
It's good that they've stayed up because I mean I kind of felt it when Yeovil got promoted a couple of seasons ago that it's nice to have those teams that are there and they offer a little bit different. You go to a stadium that is a little bit smaller, a little bit more homely, shall we say, a little bit cosier, and it just gives something different to go into places like Coventry and Southampton and all the sort of identikit stadiums that we obviously have to watch football in every other week anyway.
Well, the key decision for this in Yapstam is what to do about team selection. Do they make a raft of changes and save everyone for the playoffs, or do they play their strongest team and try and build some momentum? If either of you were in the dugout, what would you be doing?
I don't think I'd change it too much. I think I'd... look at what happened to Huddersfield. Like, they made 10 changes and lost 2-0. You don't want to, going back to the point of, okay, the playoffs are just a complete reset button, but you don't want to go into the playoffs, lose if, say, you come away from Burton with a 3-0 defeat. It doesn't really set you up well for the week after. So I'm not sure I'd change too much.
No, I don't think I'd change too much. Any fitness worries, I wouldn't bring them on at all. And maybe if you got Paul McShane on the bench for 5 minutes, that might be quite useful, but someone like McCleary, who has been playing and has just become injured, you give them as much of a rest as you can. If say Yakumeite scores a hat-trick at Burton, do you then start him in the playoffs? Or it just kind of, if Joseph Mendes scores another couple of goals, do you drop Jan Kermigan, or do you have to find a way of playing two up front? It could create more problems. And flip it the other way, if you put the second team in, they all lose. And then you've got to think, well, it's the first team or bust now, isn't it, for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the only things I would do is I would not play Jan Kermigan. I would put Mendes and Graben in there. He's just too important to lose. I think he's about the only player in that entire squad, maybe with the exception, perhaps, again, of Liam Moore, where you'd be like, oh, because it completely throws the team into chaos if Kermigan gets injured. So I would just say to him, Stay on the bench, Jan.
I think there's a good case to make for Graben starting up front because he's probably going to play down the wing with McCleary being unfit. So if you can get Graben playing up front and get him scoring and then shift him to the wing for the playoffs, I think that'd be quite useful.
Absolutely. And if McShane and Vandenberg are looking like they're likely to return, stick him in and start and give him 45 minutes. They just need match practice. Otherwise, I wouldn't do too much else. Right. It's come all down to this in the Prediction League as well, despite having 45 games to separate ourselves. It's all four people can win it going into the final day of the season. Dave Hambags Harris and Johnny Williams are co-leaders on 34 points. Charles Watts is second on 32. I myself am third on 31 points. And Westy, unfortunately, is mathematically out of contention on 26. So, could go anyway. Before I give my prediction, the two of you don't have this pressure of this prediction lead to deal with, but what are you going with?
2-2.
2-2, Becca.
3-2, Reading.
I have to go ridiculously bold just because of, well, not ridiculously bold, but I need something outstanding to win this. So I'm going to go oddball and go for a 3-2 Burton win. Not because I think that's going to happen, but I just need something different to win it, if you get what I mean.
There's no point doing the same as everyone else at this.
Exactly. Season. I can just hear Johnny Williams writing down 3-2 Burton for my prediction right now. Anyway, I will get the prediction of all of those chaps and make sure it's all on the level before going into it. But that does wrap up the show. Now, I said we will be recording a Pub Chat Extra for YouTube very shortly, so stay tuned for that later in the week. In terms of when this podcast returns, probably Tuesday or Wednesday next week with a pre-playoff special. and then we won't be back again probably until the before the final. He says optimistically.
Yeah, I was going to say when the season's over.
When this, or if the season is then over.
If we lose 7-0 to Fulham away in the second leg, then it'll be September when we're back.
When we come out of hibernation. But no, stay tuned to YouTube as well and this podcast feed, because we are doing post game shows now, and we will upload those to the audio feed as well. A lot of people have said, "Well, I don't have the time to watch, but I do like to listen." So I've been trying to upload those as well. So stay tuned to that. Anyway. Becca, Mark, thank you very much for joining me on this week's show. And thank you to everybody out there for listening. And as always, if you have got a couple of extra quid and like what we do, patreon.com/TileSend. And of course, thetilesend.com for plenty more content, opinion and analysis. In the meantime, go on your Mars.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@TheTarlhurstEnd
and facebook.com/TheTarlhurstEnd.